This is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu. Embassy Suites by Hilton Charleston, an all-suite hotel and conference center minutes from Yeager Airport and Capital Market. Reservations and brasserie dining information available at hilton.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.
Welcome to the legislature today. I'm Brianna Heaney. On Wednesday, Senate Majority Whip Senator Jay Taylor, a Republican from Taylor County, issued a formal press release withdrawing Senate Bill 51 from consideration. The bill would have removed the rape and incest exceptions to West Virginia's abortion ban. Today, a very similar bill, House Bill 2712, was filed in the House of Delegates, introduced on the floor, and sent to the chamber's Health and Human Resources Committee. Though it's still early, issues of gender identity have been prominent in the legislative session this year. As Chris Schultz reports, the Senate Education Committee took up the issue in their meeting today.
The Senate Education Committee approved two of its three bills Thursday without discussion. Senate Bill 37 would allow certain teachers to exchange unused leave for monetary compensation. Senate Bill 158 modifies eligibility requirements for serving as a member of the State Board of Education to more closely align with the requirements for county board members and limit partisan activity. Discussion on Senate Bill 154 took up most of the 30-minute meeting. The bill would prohibit public schools from requiring students to participate in sexual orientation instruction. But the bill also has requirements that school staff report a student's request for an accommodation that is intended to affirm the student's gender identity, such as using preferred pronouns, to parents and guardians. The bill further allows for parents and guardians to bring civil action against the public school if impacted by a violation of the law. Senator Joey Garcia, a Democrat from Marion County, questioned several aspects of the bill and expressed concern that the bill's language would disallow sex education in West Virginia schools. Garcia, who is a lawyer, also raised the issue of opening up opportunities for litigation based on what he called the bill's unclear language.
I just think this bill creates a lot of issues and a lot of headaches for teachers and administrators that it doesn't need to, and I really don't see a problem. And it seems to be, again, focused on some of the most vulnerable people and children. And again, children in my district.
Committee Chair Senator Amy Grady, a Republican from Mason County, is the bill's sponsor. She presented an identical bill, Senate Bill 515, last year and successfully advanced it through the Education Committee. However, the Senate Judiciary Committee failed to take up the bill. In response to Garcia, Grady said she took her right to make decisions for her children very seriously and wanted to ensure that right was protected for all parents.
It just says you cannot confirm or affirm a child's feelings, mental health feelings of that I feel that I'm another gender without making that be a parent's decision. And I think we need every parent to have that right to make that decision for their child.
Senator Mike Oliverio, a Republican from Monongalia County, and Senator Eric Tarr, a Republican from Putnam County, offered an amendment to tweak the language of the bill to require reporting in cases where a student requests an accommodation that is intended to affirm a change in the student's gender identity if different from the student's biological sex. The bill does not establish any prohibition for the language school staff may use with parental approval. The amendment was approved, and the committee ultimately recommended the bill to the full Senate. For the legislature today, I'm Chris Schultz.
This year's legislative session is already underway. But a partisan tug of war over the 91st District House seat hasn't been resolved. Reporter Jack Walker talked to Berkeley County residents, plus state lawmakers, about the drawn-out search for a successor.
The 91st House District spans southern Berkeley County. It's pretty rural, with a handful of shopping plazas and residential neighborhoods. But for months, it's been a focal point in state politics. Joseph DeSoto won that House District seat in November's election. But the picture of who would represent southern Berkeley County during this year's legislative session became a lot less clear in December. That's when DeSoto was arrested by West Virginia State Police for allegedly threatening to kill several state lawmakers. Right before his arrest, DeSoto changed political affiliations and registered as a Democrat. Under state law, lawmakers who are expelled from office are replaced by a member of their party upon removal. That would be the Democratic Party. However, DeSoto was never formally expelled, and Republicans say he never technically took office. In January, the House vacated the 91st District seat before DeSoto was sworn in, which Republicans say gives them authority over his replacement. Pam Brush is president of the Berkeley County Republicans. She said having a Republican hold the seat better represents the predominant political affiliation of the area, regardless of legal technicalities.
I called up one of our former legislators from that area, and that area has been represented by Republicans for over 40 years.
I spoke with Berkeley County residents across the political spectrum to get their thoughts on the vacancy proceedings. Most agreed they don't want political maneuvering to overshadow local issues, things like the rate of development, school overcrowding, and energy investment. Independent voter Shane Conroy says he wants Berkeley County representatives to focus on local problems, regardless of their party affiliation.
I understand that there are concerns about gentrification and additional traffic in the area, and it would be probably the best, not, you know, bipartisan decision by any lawmaker to kind of focus on issues like that. And if that means approving more solar farms, then that's great, and I support that.
Before the legislative session, Governor Patrick Morrissey appointed Ian Masters, a Republican from Jaredstown, to the seat. Masters is a lawyer and gun lobbyist. We caught up with Masters earlier this week on the House floor. He said he volunteered for the office because his background in law and abuse and neglect cases, plus his years of political participation, would help him represent the district's needs.
Year of change here down here, new administrations, new rules, and I felt, you know, I was a little bit versed in the legislative process and threw my name in there.
Masters is an alum of the West Virginia University College of Law, a father of four, and like DeSoto, a resident of Jaredstown. Master says he understands resident concerns that the vacancy proceedings over his seat have been chaotic, but he doesn't want that to cloud his work as a lawmaker.
So while I am here, my intention is to get to work and represent the folks in House 91.
Delegate Mike Pushkin is a Democrat from Kanawha County. He also serves as the chair of the West Virginia Democratic Party. The Democrats have filed appeals over the appointment process in the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia. Pushkin maintains that the Democratic Party has a right to the seat, and that the vacancy proceedings thus far haven't followed legislature vacancy laws adopted by the Republican Party itself in 2018.
The problem is they only want to follow the law when it benefits them. The law is the law, and we're just simply asking that the Republicans follow the law.
Pushkin and the state's Democratic Party say they're waiting to hear back from the state's Supreme Court of Appeals before continuing in the legal process. Meanwhile, DeSoto remains under home incarceration in Berkeley County. His next hearing in the Berkeley County Magistrate Court is scheduled for March. For the legislature today, I'm Jack Walker in Charleston.
Earlier today, Eric Douglas spoke with House Speaker Roger Hanshaw, a Republican from Clay County. They discussed a number of topics, including education, flooding in southern West Virginia, and the crisis in foster care in the state.
Welcome to the legislature today. I'm here with House Speaker Roger Hanshaw. For record, a Republican from Clay County. Thank you for coming today, sir.
My pleasure.
We had President Smith from the Senate on earlier this week, and I want to give you the same opportunity to kind of talk about some of the things on your agenda, the things that you would like to see passed this session. I'm going to give you a little quick stat, though. I looked it up earlier. the last couple years anyway, we've had about 2,500 or so bills introduced.
That's about normal, yeah.
And about 10% of those have passed.
That's right.
I know you've got a new process for the House and all that. Do you expect that many to be introduced? You got any guesses?
Oh, sure. They'll always be that number introduced, because we in West Virginia don't necessarily take up every bill that's introduced for consideration. There are states that do that. There are states in which every single piece of legislation introduced gets taken up for consideration, heard by the committees, heard by the members, and taken a vote on. But those tend to be in states that meet all year long.
Right.
We have this compressed 60-day session every year. As a consequence of that, we have to be much more judicious in how we use our committee time, what we devote time and resources to consideration of. And that just simply means we can't take up 3,000 pieces of legislation a year.
And probably shouldn't. Wouldn't want to, right?
Yeah.
any gut on how many you think will get passed through this year?
No, I don't. And I also want to say I don't really care. And
okay.
I don't mean that as a flippant answer, but what we've tried to do this year in the House of Delegates is focus a lot more on how well we solve some of the problems facing West Virginians, and a lot less on how many bills we pass.
Sure.
There's a temptation, and it's not just here, it's nationally, there's a temptation to gauge efficiency and effectiveness of a legislature based on how many bills it passes and how many pieces of legislation it moves. I've come to believe over the 10 years that I've been here, that's really just a meaningless metric, because it does nothing to really speak to how well we've solved some of the challenges that confront West Virginians, or how effectively we've managed the state's resources. It just doesn't give us a good barometer, really, for anything.
I've spoken already to Delegate Hornbuckle, to Delegate Rohrbach on the show, and they've both, in fairness, talked about quality of legislation.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
The goal is to do more to solve some of the problems that still face West Virginians, and a lot less to simply churn out and turn out more pieces of legislation.
Speaking of one of those problems, Southern West Virginia, again, is dealing with flooding over the last few days.
It's terrible. We've been in touch with most of our members from that area during the course of the entire week here about sort of what some of the needs are and what some of the challenges are. It's a terrible situation.
You and I were talking before we got started, but is there anything the state can do so we don't get into this problem again?
Well, we'll always get into it, because sadly in West Virginia it's mostly a function of geography. So because we have communities that have developed in the valleys of West Virginia, as long as there are mountains and as long as there are valleys, we will continue to have flooding. I've said many times, I'm going to continue to say, some of the problems that we see with flooding in West Virginia and the Appalachian region more broadly are a direct consequence of the federal government not allowing us to maintain our streams and rivers anymore. When I was a kid, I'll be 45 years old next month, so I'm finally old enough to say I remember when, right? And I do distinctly remember when, as a young person, farmers, landowners, riparian owners were able to do stream maintenance. We could clean out streams, we could clean out creeks, and make it easier for water to flow in times of major precipitation events. The federal EPA and the Federal Army Corps of Engineers, the Department of Justice, are so heavy, they enforce the Clean Water Act so heavily now, and really make mountains out of molehills, that farmers and landowners are afraid to do basic stream maintenance now. And over time, the accumulation of dirt and silt and rock in the streams just makes it easier and easier and easier to flood. So the flooding events become not just more frequent, but more severe. And it's a tragedy.
There's a lot of people, of course, as you said, with mountains and valleys, a lot of people, of course, live in the floodplains themselves. Unless we start moving people out of that land, I agree with that. I don't know.
Well, which we should do, by the way. One of the things I've often been critical of is that we rebuild in the same place that's flooded, and then act surprised the next time it happens. So I do think that we owe it to ourselves to think clearly and carefully every time we clean up and rebuild from a flooding event, to ask, do we need to build differently this time?
Sure. All right. I know education, especially early childhood education, but education is a primary issue for you, something you care a lot about. I believe your wife's a teacher, right?
She is. She teaches juniors at Clay County High School.
All right. So I think actually at one of the pre-session meetings, the legislative look ahead or something, you talked about the state being still 49th, 50th. What do we do? How can we change our educational system, bolster our educational system to get out of the bottom of the system?
It's a perennial question for us, Eric. We tackle that question of continuous improvement nearly every year. So just later this very afternoon, I'll have the first of a series of meetings this week about the progress monitoring for the implementation of our Third Grade Success Act. So we spoke about that off air. It's one of the things I'm proudest of during my 10 years of service here in the legislature. We're in year one of it now. So this is the first year that we're implementing the process of putting assistant teachers in every kindergarten, first, second, and third grade classroom in West Virginia. So this year it's first grade. We've had it in kindergartners for decades.
Right.
We'll have it in first grade. We have it in first grade classrooms this year. Next year it's all second grade classrooms, and we grow into all third grade classrooms the following year. I'm convinced that's going to be one of the more impactful things that we've ever done. But that's not all we can and should do here. One of the things that we want to be sure we're doing is taking away barriers that teachers have identified for us as things that keep them from being able to teach well. We expected to pass a bill on student classroom discipline last year. In fact, we would have done that. We just literally ran out of time on day 60. The Senate had sent us back a classroom discipline bill. We weren't able to act on it before the clock literally ran out on us at midnight on the last day. So I expect we will move on that bill also this year. In fact, it's already been introduced. I expect we'll take it up for a hearing shortly.
Okay. The Hope Scholarship is expected in the 2026 budget year to hit about $100 million.
It is.
That blows a big hole in the budget. How can we still support school choice, but at the same time also keep our budget from getting?
Yeah, well, you have the resources you have, right? So this to me is not at all different than the Promise Scholarship. We have the resources we have, and sometimes that means altering the eligibility standards, altering what money can be used for, what the requirements are to continue in a program. We've been here before. We had to do this when we implemented the Promise Scholarship Program. Today, the eligibility for that pool of resources looks very different than it looked when Governor Wise introduced that program in the first instance. We're gonna almost immediately get there, I believe, with the Hope Scholarship Program. You know, that program was introduced as a very narrow, very, very, very small program. It was designed initially to provide an opportunity for the parents of children who had special needs or whose needs weren't capable of being met by the public schools to find resources elsewhere. That was a good idea. I supported it. And it very quickly grew to a situation now where it's effectively just subsidizing anyone who doesn't want to be in the public school system. And that won't be a sustainable situation. We know that. They'll very quickly begin to be, I believe, some modifications to either eligibility standards or benefit amounts or perhaps both, so that it ends up looking and feeling a lot more like the Promise Scholarship Program than it does today.
PEI, the State Employees Health Insurance. It seems like that's another one that seems like we keep kicking the can down the road a little bit. I know there's been a bill introduced anyway. I don't know if it's made it to committee anywhere, but a bill introduced to actually remove or kill PEIA and move us into a private, move state employees into a private health insurance. What do we do? I know it's not just more money.
Well, it's not. You're right about that. I'm not necessarily sure I agree with the assertion that we're kicking the can down the road. We're in an 80-20 based program, so as the cost of the benefit gets identified every year, the state picks up 80 and the employees pick up 20. So that's a fairly mature system. If what you're talking about is the cost of the benefit overall increasing, then that's absolutely true across the health insurance market writ large. I'm personally covered by a private health insurance plan offered through my place of employment. Our costs go up every year also. But your point's well taken about what the future of that program looks like in a broader, more comprehensive sense, because we want to be a good employer. The state of West Virginia has an obligation to the tens of thousands of men and women who are our employees to be a good employer. But we also need to make sure that the benefit that we're providing is more than just a benefit on paper, right? It needs to actually provide benefits to the covered plan participants. So one of the things we are engaged in this session is a fairly comprehensive overview and third-party external analysis of what that benefit looks like in other jurisdictions around the country. We aren't the first state to confront this problem. In fact, all jurisdictions are confronting the problem of how do we provide a health insurance benefit to our employees. I don't know that we will act on that during the course of the next 51 days of this session, but I do believe we'll act on it this year.
Okay. Possible special session, maybe, or?
Well, we're not going to. I don't want to. So maybe. I don't want to circle a date on a calendar until we have something that we know we can act on. But we do know that action is necessary, and we do know that there's a variety of options that we might pursue. Which one makes the most sense, and which one's the right course of action is the question that remains to be seen or remains to be answered. So until we have it answered, I won't be supportive of us moving forward, but I want us to move forward soon.
I'm sure you have not seen, you were busy with your own chamber, but as in the Senate this morning, there was a resolution to honor workers who support children in foster care and in the system. But two senators, that was brought by Senator Rucker, but Senators Wolfel and Stewart both actually got up and brought up the issue that we need to do more to fix that system, the Child Protective Services, foster care. I know you didn't hear their comment.
I did not.
But any thoughts on that? Is there any legislation moving that you know of so far?
That I'm aware of, Eric? No, there's not. I would certainly welcome Senator Wolfel and Senator Stewart's proposals. Typically, those bills have been initiated out of the House the past couple sessions. We have not yet initiated a comprehensive bill this year. That doesn't mean we won't or wouldn't be open to one. But at the moment, we've not yet introduced one of those bills this year. We've done at least two fairly substantial overhauls to our foster care system and the system for caring for protected individuals in the custody of West Virginia over the course of the past 4 or 5 years. One of the things I think we have to always be cognizant of is that we have to sometimes let changes have time to percolate through the system and actually begin either working or not in order to see what additional changes are necessary. So if my colleagues there have specific ideas, certainly we'd welcome the chance to receive them, but I've not received those proposals yet.
Any thoughts? How would you fix? I mean, I obviously the part of the biggest reason children are in the state custody is the opioid epidemic and drug use and that sort of thing.
Well, children, no, the biggest reason that children are in foster care is that their parents are deadbeats, and we have to absolutely start there. And I realize that's a blunt answer. I don't mean to be flippant with your question, but it's absolutely critical that everybody realize that this is not a system that the state created. This is not a problem created by some failure of the state of West Virginia. This is a problem created when men and women prioritize substance abuse over their families. And if you're willing to prioritize pills and heroin over your children, that's an inexcusable situation in every circumstance. So I will accept no responsibility on behalf of the state of West Virginia for having created this crisis. The problem's created when parents began to prioritize, frankly, extraneous, ridiculous things over their own children.
Fair enough. We're about out of time. Is there anything else you want to say, or? Well, we've covered a lot.
Yeah, we're spending a lot of our time right now talking, as we do every year, preparing the annual state budget for West Virginia. It's the number one responsibility we have here as the legislature. We're proud of the investments that we've been able to make over the past 5 years, plowing several hundred million dollars, in fact, a couple of billion dollars into infrastructure projects. We're still committed to doubling down on infrastructure here in the House and I think across the entire legislature. So regardless of what may shake out in the state budget over the course of the next 51 days, I want viewers to know that we remain committed to public water and sewer and road projects. Those Those are things that drive the economy and totally change the lives of West Virginians. We're not losing sight of that. We're not taking our foot off the accelerator there.
Thank you, sir. I hope you come back later in the session.
It'll be a
pleasure.
We'll
talk again. All right. Thank you.
That was House Speaker Roger Hanshaw speaking with Eric Douglas. That's it for tonight. Thank you for joining us. Catch the legislature today, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. And remember, West Virginia Public Broadcasting covers the session daily in our radio news program, West Virginia Morning, and on our news site at wvpublic.org. We also broadcast the daily floor sessions of both the House and the Senate on the West Virginia Channel. I'm Brianna Heaney. Good evening, and see you here again tomorrow.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu. Embassy Suites by Hilton Charleston, an all-suite hotel and conference center minutes from Yeager Airport and Capital Market. Reservations and brasserie dining information available at hilton.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.